Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle Radio. Each week, the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in finance take you beyond the numbers and hype, right to the heart of the big issues of the day. Today, in the week of International Women's Day, we bring you a special edition of the programme. Thanks to our guests, five inspirational female leaders in the investment field will be guided through some of the key themes in the space, from gender lens investing to the rise and rise of female-controlled wealth and the impact of that on broader economics. And from the challenges facing female founders seeking to raise capital to understanding that true and enduring success must mean more than mere returns. We start with Emma Wheeler, Head of Women's Wealth at UBS Global Wealth Management. Now, we heard from Emma a few weeks ago on this theme. Let's get a quick reminder of the thoughts she shared with us after appearing at the World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos earlier this year to discuss this exact topic. I asked Emma to tell me about investment in, or perhaps better put, underinvestment in, female-founded businesses and why it remains such a critically important area to address.
I mean, it's a big issue. And, you know, we started looking at it in 2021. We published a paper called The Funding Gap with our CIO. And, you know, that really allowed us to mainstream the whole topic. There is no sense to it, but there is a significant amount of systemic barriers, if you like, within the ecosystem. And they're taking time to be broken down. There are many brilliant female entrepreneurs, of course, out there. And it's not a funding gap, it's a funding chasm. And it does make economic sense. I mean, clearly, we know now that if female entrepreneurs were invested in equally to male entrepreneurs, we'd add 3-6% to global GDP. So this really is an economic issue that we need to try to sort.
And in terms of the state of the broader discourse then, are there some crumbs of comfort, Emma, in terms of the willingness, the appetite to engage with the conversation around how we better collectively break down the barriers that are still there? Do you feel the narrative is gaining potency or buy-in or whatever you want to call it? Did you find that there was a reassuring engagement with the topic?
Yeah, there's lots of engagement, but it's just not changing quickly enough. Actually, the 2% figure of VC capital that goes globally to women-led companies, that actually went down last year. So we seem to be making a lot of noise, but those barriers are still not being broken down in meaningful ways, that it's actually, you know, impacting that flow of capital. So we need to work harder. And there are many VCs now that we're working with as part of our own UBS Female Founders Program, our Global Accelerator Program and Awards Program. And they're very actively engaged. And we are bringing these female founders on, giving them profile, giving them investor readiness training, mentoring them, bringing them into our networks. So there's definite work happening to break this down. But yeah, it's taking a while.
Well, let's hear from more inspiring female founders and investment experts who are doing consequential work in this space. First, let's meet Lu Zhang, founder and managing partner of Fusion Fund. She appeared at that World Economic Forum panel with Emma Wheeler, titled Women at the Helm of the Great Wealth Transfer. Lu Zhang, welcome to the programme. Tell me, first of all, what are the drivers behind your interest and your passion in investing? And I wonder also, obviously, you sold your company before. Did that change your motivations or your drives for doing what you do? Tell us about what drives your interest in the investing game.
So my big drive is really I want to change the world to drive positive impact. And initially, I was a material scientist at Stanford. So that's when I thought, okay, doing scientific research will help create a new technology, really explore what's going to happen in the next 10, 20 years. And later, I found a more near-term approach is to commercialize some of my technology research and make a commercial company. And that's when I became an entrepreneur. After I exited my company, I was thinking about how I could amplify the impact. How could I be a catalyst, accelerating more innovation, come to the society, change the industry, be able to really benefit everyone? That's when I started Fusion Fund about 10 years ago. So that's what I've been doing the past 10 years. And I had a reputation that people always think I'm a workaholic. But the reason I work hard is because I'm so passionate about what I'm working on. I feel excited every single day when I get up. I just had an early 8 a.m. screening call with the founder this morning, and it was so exciting. I was joking with my team. I'm like, that's the reason I don't need to drink coffee. I just need to have a wake-up call, screening call with an awesome founder, knowing what is the exciting technology they're working on, I got all the energy for my whole day.
In terms of female-controlled wealth, it's a significant percentage now, isn't it, of global wealth. What impact do you think that increasing ratio of female-controlled wealth, what kind of impact is that going to have in global economic terms, do you think?
Yeah, so first, I think that's really the right direction to go to, because we've been talking about, for example, in the tech industry, at least the 50% of users are women, but how many tech innovation are focused on females application or even female healthcare application? So now with more female leader become female entrepreneur, female investor, that's definitely have more attention to address to the needs for this 50% of the population, which is very, very important issue and also very big market opportunity. Another thing, I think in general, female wealth owner tend to have more focus on the impact-driven investment. And also I've been served on a couple nonprofit really promoting the impact investing, and lots of the contributor are female entrepreneur, female leader, and female investor. So I think that's really important, a part about how we really look at technology innovation, but in a way to not only just for the financial purposes, but also bring the positive impact to all different industry. And another thing I think is really about women are playing such an important role in each community and also every family. And as a mother to the kids, as a really big kind of the supporter to the family member, be able to empower them with more kind of wealth control, to be able to also have more compassion to allocate the capital to take care of different aspects of the family and the society. So I think that's definitely the right direction to go. I don't think we have enough for now. I'm glad to hear that you said that the metric is getting better. I think we should even do better in the near future.
Well, let's talk about some of the other potential impacts on the space, because one of the sort of themes that we're discussing on this program with you, Leo, and with some of our other guests is this idea of investing strategies with a gender lens. And I'm really interested. I know, obviously, you have been involved in lots of early stage investments. You kind of mentioned that already. What do you think gender lens investing strategies specifically, how can they help investors rethink early stage investments and crucially rethink risk and the associated risk with those early stage strategies? Because I think that's one of the potentially transformational impacts. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, totally. I will highlight two things. Number one thing is really, diversity is critical to innovation. So when we have more discussion about gender lens for early stage investment, people are more open-minded about what is important, how important to bring diversity to innovation and also power them. And also when we're talking about artificial intelligence, you know, AI is a hot buzzword right now, but the foundation of AI really be able to acquire high quality data. And which part of data is important, not only just absolute quality, but also how diverse the quality of the data it is, will also decide on the training result of the AI. So that's the reason when we talk about diversity is critical to innovation, it's not only a social impact term, it's the actual commercial term. And when we have more of the gender lens discussion to it, I think it will be able to foster more of the diversity into the innovation community, innovation idea, and also innovation ecosystem. I think another thing is also coming back, you know, I mentioned a couple times about the data, but also data could be biased. Think about what are the consistency of the data. For example, if only certain group of people are consistent using the digital tool or AI tool, that's how their data have been collecting. If we don't have enough women or minority using the AI tool or don't have access to use all this technology platform, the data set doesn't have their representation. Then using this group of data to train AI model, eventually deliver the product, of course, naturally have bias. So that's also very, very important to have us aware of this potential risk and be able to bring more user, female investor, female entrepreneur into the innovation ecosystem to generating the data, to make the data set in general more comprehensive. And then we'll be able to have innovation serve all the population, not only certain group of population.
Liu Zhang. Anouk Hilty of Asseray is a purpose-driven investor. She focuses on accelerating social and environmental outcomes, in particular blending for-profit and non-profit initiatives to achieve maximum impact. Thanks for being with us, Anouk. I know that you're a believer in this idea that, you know, you are what you invest in, right, Anouk? So tell me a little bit about what that means to you personally.
Yeah, sure. So we always say we are what we eat, right? And so we identify a lot with what we take into our bodies, but we should equally identify with our investments, because that is actually, in most cases, our biggest lever for change. So especially women actually tend to become vegan, or in general, like change their lifestyle if they care, for example, about the environment. But if they would look into their finances, if they're wealth owners, that would have actually a much bigger impact. And so I always say you are what you invest in. You need to identify as an investor and act upon your lever for change.
And I think it's really interesting when we look at these sort of topics through the gender lens to consider that, you know, it's not just about funding. It's not just about the investment. There are all kinds of corollary issues and systems that we need to address. One I find interesting is the gender gap, the huge gender gap in entrepreneurial funding. We know the figures, they're very stark. It should scandalize society, right, Henok, that it's so inequitable. But it is important to remember, despite that, it's not just about money, is it?
Definitely not. Non-financial support is equally, if not more important. It's really about bringing women into the right networks, giving them access to the right context, because in the end, if we are in the right context, we're being taken seriously, and it will be much easier to sell our idea and get partners on board to collaborate. And yeah, especially when it comes to impact funding, we need to collaborate across different capital pools, across the capital stack even. So the most impactful investment, in my opinion, would be if we start literally with philanthropic capital, then potentially private investors that take the risk after the philanthropic capital, then we have an impact fund coming in, literally ending up with a pension fund scaling the initiative. So I think that would really be the most impact that we could have.
Often on this program, and we talk about lots of the really big secular trends that shape this space, whether that's, you know, digitalization or shifts in demography or whatever it might be. And one I think that's highly relevant here is this huge, unprecedented wealth transfer. And obviously, we talk often about the fact that that's happening between generations, right? But we maybe talk a little bit less about how that is happening and redefining the gender balance in terms of who's actually got the levers to maneuver in terms of great wealth. There's a huge change. And I can't remember the exact figures, but I think women already are now controlling a majority of wealth, or certainly that's the direction of travel. What does that mean, that evolution? What kinds of opportunities, what kind of challenges? How do you make sense of those shifts?
Yeah, I think one of the most important facts is that 70% of wealth will be transferred to female individuals in the next two generations. And that's not only vertical, that's also horizontal, right? So we have wives who tend to live longer than their husbands, who are usually also younger, actually. And so they will mainly shape the way the next generation goes about their investment strategy. And other than that, I think if we get more women into decision-making roles in the investment space, we will also have more investments into women. As you mentioned before, only 1% to 2% of global VC funding goes towards female individuals, female founders. But on the other hand side, women actually perform much better. So once they get the funding, female founders give you more value to the dollar invested.
Yeah, and just on that point, because this is sort of an aspect of this that always crops up when we discuss this, the fact that you know, the dollar invested in a female-founded business performs so much better. I think it's sort of 2.5x, right? How do we address the obvious systemic problems? Because it's not just about even performance of the capital, which does better. Are we making enough progress on that? And are there other, I don't know, stakeholders that need to do more? We're looking at this around kind of International Women's Day. It's a great day to kind of zero in on this, but the point is we need to be doing this every day, right?
Exactly. I mean, there is this phenomenon of meritocracy, right? So that men tend to invest in other men because they see themselves in them. And so I think this is really something that we could leverage if we had more women in decision-making roles when it comes to investments, because then they will automatically invest in more women. And also women have a more holistic perspective in general and are more conscious. So I actually see a big opportunity for more impact, for a more holistic perspective on returns, including social and environmental impacts, when we have more women, be it as fund managers, be it wealth advisors, be it wealth owners, on all levels.
Anouk Hilty. Anna Mahoney is the CEO of Addition Wealth and a former guest on this programme. My colleague Chris Chermak spoke to Anna and began by asking her about her own journey in this space and what advice she would give to others looking to raise investment for female-founded businesses.
As we know, the statistics show that it can be hard for women entrepreneurs to raise capital. That being said, there are many female entrepreneurs who have built fantastic businesses alongside building fantastic products. And I am sure that there are many, many more that are in the process of building fantastic companies and that will do so in the coming future. My advice would be to think broadly about capital sources. There is obviously the traditional VC funding, which is it can be a great resource and where we know there's a lot of statistics about the potential of where women can get access to capital. But there's also many other sources. There are accelerators that can provide not just capital, but also support and resources as you initially grow a company. There are many grants that can be access to funds that don't take dilution, and they also give you capital to grow a business. Once businesses are slightly more established, there can be debt financing, there are small business loans. And of course, the best source of capital, I think, is revenue. Go to market, see if there are folks or individuals or companies that are willing to pay for your product, and then that source of revenue can fund the growth of your business as well.
Anna, you've talked about some of the resources there, but I do wonder, in your view, why capitalism itself has maybe not succeeded in addressing the gender disparity that does exist in how companies are founded and how they grow. Why isn't this happening naturally? What kind of changes would you like to see here?
I think some of it stems from the very top. A lot of the funders, and I'm actually not even just talking about the venture capitalists, but the LPs that fund the VCs, the pension funds, where some of this funding comes from. Oftentimes women and other groups are not reflected at the very top of where the funding sources begin that then trickle down. And you see that impact across multiple industries, whether it be enough research not being done on women's health or products in general not reflecting the needs of broader communities that represent a large portion of society. So in terms of the gender disparity that is there, the change that I would love to see is that more of the funders and the buyers are reflective of what broader society looks like. Because I think that would not only change access to funding, but it would also start to create more products, services, research needs that reflect needs for broader groups as well. And I actually think there's massive opportunity that supports a capitalistic society. There are products that could be bought and do really great service for different types of people. There are massive groups of talent that I think remain untapped because of some of these challenges and funding or research or knowledge that you get along the way. So I think there's a massive opportunity if we can start to see the capital allocators also reflecting different types of individuals that we'll see then trickle down and will be a massive opportunity to build great businesses, provide solid products, and also return a lot of money to investors.
Well, Anna, speaking of those opportunities, if you were to propose a sort of gender lens investment strategy, what does that look like for you? What is the most effective way for investors to support female founders right now?
I don't know that we need different gender lens investment strategies. I think we just need to make sure that capital that is allocated, whether it be through VC financing, debt financing, access to accelerators, grants, buyers who are providing revenue to companies, we just need to give companies that are founded by all different types of entrepreneurs equal access to it. And I think what you will then see is that fantastic products and services and businesses will be created and built that will satisfy the needs of the broader society and then return fantastic profits to the investors that give them. I don't know that we need to do too many different investment strategies because there are many fantastic women out there building awesome companies. You just need to be able to provide access to those funds. The one change that I would love to see is more female investors at VCs, at LP funds that are giving money to venture capitalists and saying, let's see that you have a diversified set of entrepreneurs and products and services that you're supporting, as well as the funds doing the same that are investing in the LP groups that then go find different funds and entrepreneurs to invest in. The hardest part of the entire entrepreneurial journey for me was the decision to do it. And so my advice would be bet on yourself and take a chance. Once you're in it, I think you can work through it. And if it doesn't work out, you can find another way to provide great value.
Anna Mahoney talking to Chris Chermak. Finally, on this special edition, let's hear from Julia Rees-Toder, who runs Prince's Capital, an independent portfolio advisory firm focused on building the absolute best portfolios for families and institutions. Chris Chermak was in the chair for this one, and he began by asking what's driven Julia's interest in investing and whether she had a so-called light bulb moment that crystallized things.
Yes, I actually did have a light bulb moment. This was all the way back when I was an undergrad at Princeton studying mechanical engineering and computer science. What I loved the most about that program was the technical rigor and the problem solving and the teamwork. But then I realized I needed to not be in the lab and I needed to be talking to people more. And I found that I could get those favorite parts of engineering in maybe a more fun setting in investing and finance. So then I went to work in the asset management division at Goldman Sachs right after I graduated from undergrad.
And tell me more about where you've kind of gone from there and your current role.
Absolutely. So I had the absolute pleasure of working at Goldman Sachs Asset Management for a full 12 years. What we were doing at Goldman was taking it from a top 100 asset manager to a top 10 during my time there. Goldman Sachs had products in every different asset class, and my role was to advise our clients on portfolio construction and asset allocation. Essentially, I was the portfolio doctor. If a client was ailing, you know, couldn't figure out what to do with rising interest rates or was struggling to figure out how to invest in a new asset class, my role was to share our best thinking on portfolio construction and asset allocation to you know, free up those kinds of discussions. Then I moved into multifamily office worlds, working with ultra, ultra high net worth European families. I found that in the family space, by adding, you know, another layer of technically strong portfolio construction, we can really improve the outcomes and the influence and the legacies of some of these famous families. Now I run Prince's Capital. So we are an independent portfolio advisory firm focused on building the absolute best portfolios for our families or institutions.
Wonder if you could talk about how you see female controlled wealth evolving in this space. And as it does evolve and investing in it evolves, what kind of impacts do you think this could have on the global economy?
It's such a good question. And it's something that I've been paying attention to for years. I did a tally in my career. I've worked on trillions of dollars worth of portfolios and about 20,000 portfolios built by men, built by women, built by men and women working together, built for men, for women. So I'm super aware of this and tracking it myself. First of all, I think that women are relaxing into our roles at the investment table. You know, women already control or influence 80% of global consumer spending. Take an example of picking a financial advisor. That's a form of consumer spending. And you know, how likely is a financial advisor to retain that business if he's not working with the wife, only working with the husband? Most of the research shows that about 90% of the time when the primary client, namely a man, dies, the inheritor, so be it the wife or the next generation children, move the money away from that advisor 90% of the time. There's clearly a screaming business case and opportunity in working better with women if you're a financial advisor. Actually, I modeled out the evolution of a typical private banker's book of business. And I found that about 69% of the money managed by advisors will transfer to female control, be it that same generation spouse or 50% of the next gen heirs being women. And also, I want to make the point that, you know, all this professional progress for women leaves more room for men on the home front. And we need the progressive workplace as well as a modern home for women to continue to step into this role of controlling a lot of wealth. This really came to the forefront for me once when I was sitting in the car while my husband dropped off our son at daycare. I was on an investment committee meeting, so I stayed in the car. And he was handing my son to the daycare worker, and she took my son and then swerved around my husband and yelled at me in the car, "Mom, does he have socks?" And I was shocked, you know? She actively ignored my son's father standing right there. And with all the assumptions that her actions revealed, you know, she tore my husband down and she tore me down. So I think, you know, we have to make sure that we're leaving room for men to progress on the home front because women are progressing on the professional front. This is a key part of being able to relax into your role as a, you know, a woman investor.
Julia Rees-Toder talking to Chris Chermak. And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle Radio. You can discover more and find out how UBS can help you at ubs.com. And with International Women's Day on the 8th of March, why not visit ubs.com/IWD for more? You can also follow UBS's global Instagram and LinkedIn channels for more inspiring ideas to invest for progress. This is The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle Radio. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks for listening.